U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and 720 WGN.
Happy Friday afternoon, everyone. Man, it looks like a Friday outside, too. Hope it matches your mood. Sunny skies and a long weekend in store. Well, regular size weekend, I guess you could say. But we got the Bears game on Sunday afternoon. So it's going to be a fun, action-packed weekend, I hope, for everyone out there. We got a fun-packed show here today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand, who will be back on Monday. So fear not, friends. And a friend of the show, always joining us, Andrea Haines, editor at Blue Sky Innovation. Andrea, how you doing today?
Great, John. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Let's jump right into Tesla. Tesla sales are down, or certainly at least they created more supply than the demand for Tesla. A few things at play here, right?
There are. They're cutting prices a little bit, which, you know, for these storied brands, that's always a little bit of a psychological hit, I guess. So who still wants a Tesla? Are there still buyers out there? Are people still lining up? It looks like not quite as much.
Yeah, and this certainly could be the fact that there is more demand than supply, but also a federal tax credit is getting slashed in half and eventually going away, right?
Exactly. So it's about $3,700. So a little bit of that price boost, but is the Tesla buyer like that concerned about $1,000 here or there? So yeah. Will the price cut help? Will the tax cut matter? Those, you know, remains to be seen. It's right. Just like, is that glow still on the Tesla?
Yeah, and I wonder that if people, there's a certain buyer that will buy a Tesla, someone that is energy conscious or just likes the new shiny thing. And I imagine a lot of those people have bought Teslas in the last, what, 3-4 years or so. Cars last longer than that. I think that that customer may not be there. I imagine what Tesla needs to do is continue to grow that customer base.
Yeah, you need to reach more mainstream buyers. So there, maybe price change will help a little bit. But I just wonder, like, is it a showstopper still? It probably still is, right? And like, inevitably, you run out of buyers at a certain level. You have to get into a more mainstream market. So that's what they'll be trying to do.
And I think part of the struggle, this is just my opinion, that getting into that mainstream market for Tesla is challenged by the fact that gas prices continue to go down. I mean, if I'm someone that's looking to buy a Tesla, maybe more mainstream, someone that's not higher end, I'm like, well, I want to save money on gas. Well, guess what? Gas is under $2 a gallon in some spots. That certainly could impact that decision.
Yeah, gas prices have been cheap for a long time, really, overall. So definitely impacts buying.
All right, let's talk about something crazy, at least I think. Self-driving food delivery being tested on college campus. And we're not talking about Ubers going around or self-driving cars. These are little robots that are just to deliver snacks. How does this work?
Yeah, so this is coming to us from Pepsi.
Okay.
So they'll be on college campuses, starting with one in California. And you can order your like baked Lays and your Sun Chips and your sparkling water. And you literally go out and meet a six-wheeled robot at 50 locations on campus. So it's like a walking vending machine.
I was just going to say, you know what would be better than something moving around campus, potentially running into people or causing a mess or it not working, is if you had 50 or so of these things in buildings in a stationary position that you paid and you got a snack from. This seems like an overreach, and maybe that's part of it here.
Yeah, it almost seems like it's, you know, it's a branding exercise almost. Mm-hmm. I'm speculating here, but it does seem like you want to tap into that innovative customer. It's something cool, and maybe just the cool factor is something. And I have to say, it reminds me of one of the very first Blue Sky stories 5 years ago. There was a contest at the Field Museum where they had like students bring their innovative ideas, and the kids had hilarious ideas because they have no filter.
Right.
And one of the kids' winning ideas was a refrigerator that comes to you.
Really?
And in the last year or so, there have been a couple innovations, of which I would say this is one that is pretty much like the refrigerator coming to meet you.
Yeah, and
it's
kind
of scary.
Yeah, and I just, you know, when you're talking about just snacks, too, you wonder what's the price markup on these things and how they're going to be able to do it. But, you know, it could be just, like you said, more of a marketing thing, get people interested, get people talking. But you never know. Sometimes these ideas that we roll our eyes at turn out to be the ideas of the future. Something that is a little bit more retro is an idea of an online company having a brick and mortar. A lot of the companies still see the value in it. Maybe not at the big spaces that we are seeing, still these vacant places for Toys R Us's or Office Max. But talk us through some of these smaller brands that are picking highly concentrated areas for people to shop in.
Yeah, there are a number of them. The Business Section wrote about this week on the retail beat, where like companies like Warby Parker, Allbirds are coming into specific neighborhoods. They obviously want to reach a particular consumer and almost create little shopping districts for some of these brands that we know online. I know we've talked about Warby Parker in the past, which is definitely one that has already done this. I'm wearing my Warby Parkers that I got in person in Lincoln Park.
I just took mine off, yeah, a couple hours ago.
And I wanted to go in person, I have to say. And so now you've got some of these other brands that want to, you know, they want the same. They want to display their product and let you come see it.
And I think there are still some things, I'm one of the last millennials to go to Amazon. I admit this fully. I don't like buying clothes online. I wouldn't ever buy glasses solely online unless I had like physically tried them on. Do you think that this is still something that they're capitalizing on, that there's still these people, a lot of us, that just don't feel comfortable buying something that we're going to put on our bodies that reflect how we look, how we feel, unless we actually do it ourselves?
Yeah, I think that's totally true. And I think there is also, shopping can also be an activity, you know, and I think this is, as these come together in certain neighborhoods, in this case, in sort of a subsection of Lincoln Park, like you can see people going out and actually having shopping as an activity like we used to not that long ago.
Yeah, right. And what is Parachute? I don't even know what Parachute is. You mentioned that in the story, too.
Yeah, so there's Home Stuff.
And Bonobos I know well, yes.
Yes, yes.
Great clothing option there. I don't even know what Allbirds is. God, I'm not on the...
Oh, I thought you might be an Allbirds guy.
No,
like,
what is
so
it?
Those are like cool kind of sneakers.
Oh, I'll have to try it out. That's another thing. I would not buy sneakers online.
Yeah. Oh, really? See, I would.
No.
I've like totally jumped over on the clothing and shoes.
Really?
I buy tons of that online.
Oh, no. I got really weird feet, Andrea.
Well, then you got to return a lot. That's the other thing. You've got to be adept at like the return process and have your packing tape ready to go.
No.
And yeah.
You're speaking the exact opposite of who I am. Andrea, where can people find out more about these stories and more?
ChicagoTribune.com.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you,
Andrea.
John.
Have a great
good
weekend,
to see
you. Okay? 15 minutes, you can fly. Pretty blue lights along the way. Got you right on by. In the blue lights shining with a heavenly grace. Got you right on by. 720 WGN. I gotta admit, I drove down here to WGN a little earlier this morning. The sun looked great, glistening off Lake Michigan. I rolled down the windows for about 10 seconds. It's still a little too chilly for that, but I blared that song on my way in, and it felt really good for a Friday. We're going to say a Happy New Year right now to Rochelle Garner, the feature editor and reporter at CNET. Rochelle, Happy New Year. Thanks for joining us here on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
My pleasure to be here, and Happy New Year to you.
So I got to admit something to you, Rochelle. The first story we're going to talk about, this is, maybe I should know more about this, but I'm naive to the fact that, number one, I didn't realize that Apple wasn't the number one phone maker in the world, that was Samsung. And I had never heard of this company, which overtook them as number two, Huawei, which is in a little bit of a, I don't want to say hot water, but a few of their employees are for a tweet, right?
Yes, they are. And it shows you how you really need to pay attention to the little things.
Yeah.
First off, Huawei is massively known for being a networking equipment supplier. Competes against Cisco. But it is also now the number two phone maker in the world. It's out of China. And that's where things started to go south. Their digital media company, digital marketing company, wanted to tweet out a Happy New Year to folks.
That sounds
great.
Nice. Yeah.
It is. It's, the only problem is, if you're going to, you can't really tweet from in China on Twitter. To do that, you need a VPN. That's a virtual private network.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't do that on your laptop, apparently, from Hong Kong, where this is. So what they had to do was they went off to a local telecom carrier in Hong Kong, got a SIM card, which is what you can do with any unlocked phone, and they were able to tweet Happy New Year.
Sounds good.
But they tweeted it from an iPhone. And at the bottom of the tweet, it said, tweet from an iPhone. So their mistake was not using the Huawei phone. And the poor little folks who were responsible for that were demoted and had their monthly pay cut. So, like I said, it just pays. You have to really pay attention to the little things.
The devil is in the details, Rochelle.
It really is.
All right, let's talk about the Senate confirming Trump's science advisor. This has been a long vacancy, right?
This has been 2 years, the longest it's ever been vacant. And this is a really important post. This is the head of the Office of Science and Technology Policy. It is part of the White House. And it helps guide not only federal research spending, but also helps lead government policy in areas such as artificial intelligence, climate change, precision medicine, very important issue, and online privacy. The gentleman who's confirmed is named Kelvin Drugenmeier. I love the fact that we have a science guy whose first name is Kelvin.
Yes, right.
And he is an expert in extreme weather, which does raise the issue of if he's going to help push the fact that nearly every scientist out there does believe that climate change is occurring.
Well, that's the key question, because you see that he's well-trained in meteorology. You see him, he's an extreme weather specialist. Our good friend Tom Skilling on WGN-TV here, he gets a lot of flack on Facebook, but he is very much about how climate change is a real problem. We need to deal with this. He's a skilled meteorologist, of course. Everyone in Chicago knows him. But do we know? I mean, there's some meteorologists out there. Well, I shouldn't speculate, but do we know? Has he stated any public opinions about climate change? I'm crossing my fingers here.
I haven't heard that he's stated any public opinion. I have looked, though, at this issue off and on for years. And the thing about that, with just in the past 8 months, for example, 98% of all climate scientists from NASA on down have basically endorsed the fact that climate is changing. It is happening so rapidly that it is not a normal
natural
event, and that it is man-made, and that even the White House just a few months ago issued saying we have to start doing something. So you can choose to believe it or not, but all the science, and really I'll say 98% of the science points to the fact that it's real.
Oh, no. This is, for me, this is settled fact without a doubt. Some of the intricacies might be figured out here and there. But the last question I had about that, I was surprised when I found out that this was even Senate confirmable, because the role, you know, he's a science and technology advisor. But as you said, he leads a staff. And right now, that entire staff is seeing giant vacancies. So this is a big issue.
This is a huge issue and a very important issue, because science and technology have really informed everything about what we do and how we live. And so these are not just some kind of people off in some kind of ivy-covered halls coming up with abstract science ideas. These will affect our how we live, what we breathe, the money that we spend. It is absolutely infuses everything.
Mm-hmm. All right, last story here. So everyone's been talking about how the government's quarter shut down. The FCC is kind of ceasing operations as of yesterday, or at least major operations. Everyone on radio wondering if we can just swear unabated now and we're not going to get in trouble. I don't think that's necessarily the case. But the FCC chairman is canceling some plans, right?
Yes, that's right. He was intended to have been at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, which begins Monday. For some people, begins earlier than that.
Right.
He was supposed to have been interviewed by the head of the Consumer Technology Association, but he's canceled that because with the shutdown, essentially, all travel money has disappeared. This is the second time in a row he's had to cancel. He canceled his last appearance for last year, and it turns out that the reason he did that was because he received death threats, he and his family did, after pulling back on net neutrality.
So 2 years in a row, I guess we'll have to wait to see. I mean, like this year, that seems like a legitimate excuse. Last year, you know, certainly death threats are not appropriate no matter what you feel politically, but some could say that he was looking for political cover and didn't want to be around a bunch of tech experts. I guess we'll have to wait to see if year number three next year, if he's able to make it, Rochelle.
Let's see if our memories stretch that long.
Yeah, I don't know if it does anymore. Rochelle from CNET, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it, okay?
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah. 720 WGN, happy Friday. Wintrust Business Lunch. John Hanson in for Steve Bertrand. If you like the music you're hearing today, you can thank me. Normally, you can blame Bennett if you don't like it, but that was some Tegan and Sarah. I went ahead and picked some of the bumpin' songs here today. I'm really fascinated by this next topic, joined by Maria Vathis of the Federal Bar Association, the president of the Federal Bar Association. Maria, thanks for stopping by today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so I took a constitutional law class in college. I was thinking about becoming a lawyer at some point. Decided to do something else, of course. But the First Amendment is an incredible incredible amendment, of course. It's something that we here in the press, we stand by vehemently. But it's a lot more complicated than people realize. People throw out the First Amendment in situations where they shouldn't. First of all, I love how I'm lecturing you about this. Congress shall make no law. People seem to forget that that first part is there. Mm-hmm. And then not all speech is protected, of course, right?
That's right.
And we often think that for whatever reason that it is. And this all leads to exactly what we'll be talking about in a second. But just to say that it is a fascinating amendment to chat about. And first of all, before we get into this really cool essay contest you're talking about, why don't you talk about what the Federal Bar Association is and who you guys are?
Sure. So we are a group that's geared toward people practicing in federal court. We're made up of private attorneys and also a lot of judges and also practitioners in the federal court system as well.
So you're doing an outreach to middle school and high school students, right?
Yes.
In the form of what every middle school and high schooler loves to do, an essay contest. It's old school. I like that.
It sure is, yes. But we've been doing it now for a few years, and we're really excited to do it again this year.
So what is the topic? What do you want students writing about this year?
So this year we are focusing on cyberbullying and the First Amendment.
Complicated issues, one that is not settled case law, I imagine, right now.
Absolutely. So there's some case law that can guide us, but it's still sort of up in the air, and different states have, you know, different ways of handling it. So it's an interesting issue.
And how did you come up with that topic? Why did you guys narrow it down to that one?
I was actually interviewed by another attorney. His name is Drew Rossow, and he's very passionate about spreading the word about cyberbullying and the negative impact that it can have. So he invited me to do a YouTube video when I took over as national president of the Federal Bar Association. And a lady who viewed that YouTube video, unfortunately, has a daughter who was the victim of cyberbullying, and her daughter committed suicide. Ugh. So she reached out to me and thanked me for creating that video. And that made me realize just how important it is to bring attention to this topic.
Yeah, it really is. It's a very serious issue. And I think that that's where that First Amendment debate rages on, is that, the old adage, you can't scream fire in a crowded theater.
Right.
And cyberbullying, some people might say, oh, it's innocent, playful, first speech protected stuff. But when you talk about that there's real violent consequences to this stuff, that's where it really becomes sad, complicated, and really a mess to sort through.
Absolutely. And I don't think the people who do the cyberbullying can always appreciate the negative impact that it can have.
And we're also talking about cyberbullying. I mean, a lot of these, let's be frank, they're kids.
Yes, absolutely. Teenagers mainly.
So what are you looking for from an essay? How long should it be? How can people submit it? I mean, what sort of depth are you looking at here?
Sure. So you can go to our website, www.fedbar.org, for a complete list of the rules and guidelines and also more about the topic. So we've got two separate essays mm-hmm. for high school students, which is 9th through 12th grade. Those essays should be 1,000 words. And then for middle school students, which is 6th grade through 8th grade, and those essays can be up to 500 words.
Are you looking for someone to interpret to have their own thoughts, first-person beliefs on what this is, or to break down the law of it? Like, what are you kind of looking for? Is it open to whatever they want to, however they want to tackle it?
We'd like to keep it open, although we do provide some guidance. We provide 4 cases that we'd like the students to take a look at and to consider in providing their essays.
How what happens at the end of this thing? Are you going to read some of these out loud? Is there a big ceremony? What happens with the other winners? Talk through that.
Absolutely. So we will have first, second, and third place winners. And the first place winners, in the past, we've flown them and a guardian to Washington, D.C., and we've presented them with cash prizes.
Ooh.
So it's a really cool opportunity. And those essays also are on our website and available publicly.
I imagine that obviously that's great for the winners that get to do that stuff. That's really fun. But I think that the goal is more broad than that, of course, to engage everyone in this sort of civil discourse. What better way to get someone involved than not a school project, something off, different that they have to do on their own, or maybe with a little pressure from mom and dad or grandma and grandpa, but to get engaged in the discussion and the civics. I mean, there's no better lesson for someone of that age.
I totally agree. And so we really hope to see a lot of participation from the Chicago area, since this is my hometown, but it is a nationwide contest.
How many years have you been doing this?
So we've been doing the essay contest now. This will be our third year.
And what sorts of, have the kids expressed that, this was great, the process to go through? What stories do you have from the past couple of years of people doing this?
Oh, well, we've got the students that have been our prior winners are people to watch, basically. Those kids are going to be very successful. And I think they've either determined through the process that they want to pursue a career in law, or they know that now they don't. So I think it can also help them, you know, perhaps guide their future choices.
Yeah, that decision didn't happen to me until senior year in college when I was like, the LSAT, I have to take that? Right. Never mind, I don't want to do that.
I don't blame you.
So Maria, the president of the Federal Bar Association. Yeah, I got that right. And 91 presidents, you're only one of 10 females, though,
that's right. That's right. I'm really excited about that. And also one of the youngest as well. So it's quite an honor.
Now, it says here that you're tied for two others. Let's get month and days out here. Let's see if you're the real winner, okay?
I think I'm the real winner, but I don't know.
What does it mean to you to obviously, you know, I feel like some people that I'm part of the LGBT community, and people are always like, oh, you're the one I don't like the idea of, oh, we carry torches for other people. But it is cool to represent a broader group of people and being a trailblazer in those sorts of areas.
Absolutely it is. And I think it's just really great to, you know, bring some focus in a positive way to women in the law, which I intend to do during my term as president. And I think that that's a really great opportunity. And the thing about the Federal Bar Association is there's a place for everyone of all ages. And I think that I represent that as well.
That's great.
Which is great.
All right. Essay contest deadlines. Where can they go for information? Run through the specs one more time.
Okay. So the deadline is coming up. It's January 22nd.
Don't get writing, folks.
Yes. 11:59 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And please visit our website, www.fedbar.org, for all of the contest details.
And don't wait till 11:58. I mean, that gets you till 2 in the morning here, Central Time, but don't do that, right?
Absolutely. Please don't do that.
All right, Maria, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Quick commercial break here on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. For generations, the mall has always been a place for young people to gather with minimal parental supervision, but that's no longer the case at Watertower Place. A new rule has been set that anyone under the age of 17 must be accompanied by someone who's at least 21 years or older on Friday and Saturday nights after 4 p.m. Oh man, that's like totally prime mall time. And Second Ward Alderman Brian Hopkins showed his support for the measure, too. Man, being a kid these days has got to be hard. But that's nothing a little strip waffle can't fix, right? Maybe not. Just don't take that away from people who fly United Airlines. Flyers took to Twitter and thought that the waffle snacks were gone for good. But the airline stated that they were simply trying out new snacks. Think about this, though. Even just a handful of like-minded consumers online have the power to influence business decisions, big and small, with their voice and the power of technology. And this is a multi-billion-dollar company. Crazy to think where we are. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Oh, what a perfect way to end the week here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Getting ready for the Chicago Bears game against the Eagles on Sunday. And Steve Burness, the president of CEO in Chicago and Northern Illinois Better Business Bureau, you're not the person here to break down the game for us, Steve.
Not yet. I guarantee a win, though. That's all I can say.
Oh, guarantee?
Guarantee to win.
You really feel that good?
I'm hoping so, yes.
Yeah. So it was a guarantee, now you're hoping so.
Hopeful guarantee.
Hopeful guarantee. Hey, a lot of people are going to be packing in Soldier Field, hottest ticket in town. Really, the Bears all year long have been the hottest ticket in town, which is amazing considering where we were a year ago when you couldn't pay someone to go to some of those games. But people got to watch out, right?
They have to watch out, especially at this time of the year when especially the playoffs gets closer, the tickets get more of a more commodity. Everybody wants them.
Mm-hmm.
Every game, the only guarantee for every game that there will be scalpers there, and there will be people that are being scammed. There will be hundreds of people that will be turned away on Sunday because their tickets are invalid. Again, you can look at these tickets, and I've been doing this for 31 years with the Better Business Bureau. You can't tell the difference in somebody's tickets.
It's probably getting harder now, and the reason why is because at least in the past day, you had like a picture of a Bears player on it. The tickets were actual tickets, and yeah, digital might make some sense, and it's easier to get into the game for some people, and the transfer of tickets is easier, but man, some people are just bringing in a piece of paper with a thing on it, and it's like, man, it's so easy to scam these things.
It's so easy to scam. People don't know what to look for, so you tell them what to look for, it doesn't matter, because the scam artist will come up with anything that you tell them, so the only way you're going to know if it's invalid is you walk in the stadium and they scan it. That's the only thing.
And I've seen people do that. I was going to a Blackhawks game a couple weeks ago and walked right in. The person next to me went ding, and then there was something wrong, and he was dumbfounded as to why, and I was like, oh gosh.
Craigslist.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. And well, so for the Blackhawks, it might be a little easier to get into the game, but if you get up there and you scan your ticket and it doesn't work on Sunday, you're done. You're not going to that
game. You're
not
going anywhere. You're turning around going back, and some people have paid thousands of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
And it just continues to go up as you get closer to Super Bowl, the prices will keep going up, but the scams keep it growing.
Yeah.
A lot of it's on the Craigslist, so you know, it's when you're buying on Craigslist, you don't know who the person is, and you can't feel and touch like a couch. It's like buying somebody from somebody in a dark alley. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't do that normally for a ticket. Why would you do this for this particular game? So anybody on Craigslist, that's not a safe way, because you don't know if the ticket is valid or not until you walk in. It's a couch different. You know, you can see it, feel it, touch it, and they deliver it. But if it's a ticket, you know, you can't tell.
Things like StubHub, I've used them for years since they started. Everything's always gone fine for them, and they have a guarantee usually, too, that if there's something wrong, that they'll find a way for you to get into the game.
Exactly. That's the key, is that they're a licensed ticket broker, and that's what consumers should utilize, is licensed ticket brokers, and make sure they're licensed. Don't, because the website says they're licensed, doesn't necessarily mean. So they have to do their due diligence. Again, it's safe by going licensed ticket brokers or going to Chicago Bears website, and they actually have ticket brokers part of their website that they recognize.
Any others off the top of the head that you know that people can go to besides StubHub?
There's quite a few of those. Just make sure that they're licensed. That's the key, is that, you know, a lot of websites are, you know, temporarily and fake, and they just want your credit card number, and they copy and paste. So people say, well, they said they were licensed. Well, they don't have a license. The scammer is going to tell you anything they want you to hear.
Right.
So if you meet somebody on Craigslist, they're going to meet you and say, oh, yeah, these are great tickets.
Yeah.
You
know? It's a rule of thumb, too, with anything in life. But if you're looking at a price and it seems like it's low, there's probably a reason for that. They're trying to move it quickly.
Yeah, that's what we call the tip-off to the rip-off, to be honest with you. Anything that offers seems good to be true, it usually is. But people see it online, and usually on a Google search return results, the first two are ads. So people sometimes don't realize that. Anybody can buy that ad for $5 or $10.
So it looks legit from a Google search or something like that. Yeah.
You can't tell. It says ad in there, but people don't realize the first two or three listings are ads.
Mm-hmm.
And they click on it because it's on Google, and it's got to be trusted. It's the internet. Everything's on the internet is true.
Right.
And then you realize that there's fake organization. I can't tell you how many of those tickets for these theaters, you know, for Hamlets and all those that pop up. You think you're buying it from the venue, and it's not. It's a third party making it look like they're the venue. The URL has the name of the venue, but it's at the end instead of at the beginning.
Right.
So as a consumer, you got to do your due diligence, but also go to the website directly yourself. Don't let Google take it, you know.
Right.
They're keying the information yourself.
Obviously, sometimes people still do this. They bring a wad of cash to the game. They're exchanging some with someone outside of the stadium. Right. Boy, you're in trouble then.
Exactly. Cash is the same thing as opening the window, throwing in money out the window.
Yeah.
Because you don't know until you walk up there. And they'll say they'll be there waiting for you. If you had any problems, they're gone.
At least if you do it via credit card, even if you get scammed, you can cancel and just pay the charge. You're not going to the game, at least, but at least you're not losing the money.
Exactly. Credit card's your safest bet, even over a debit card, because the debit card, don't forget, is your money. The credit card is the bank's money. So you have a better chance of getting the bank's money back when you use a credit card.
I've been lucky I haven't been scammed in this regard, but I imagine people have. There's probably a sense of embarrassment. And look, if this happens to you, there's no sense in, you know, beating yourself up too much about it. This happens to hundreds of people all the time. But like, let people know about it. They can let you know about it,
right? Calling the Better Business Bureau is the most important thing. Everybody knows we handle complaints, but they really don't understand. We do reviews on organizations. We grade organizations, and we can tell you the scams that are out there. We have scam trackers similar to Santa Tracker, which we watch the scams throughout the U.S. and North America, and we can tell you exactly in your zip code what kind of scams are actually happening. So, yes, come to the Better Business Bureau first. I guess I've been doing this for 31 years. My biggest frustration in my career has been people call me after the fact when I can't do anything because they're a scammer and they're gone.
Right.
A woman last year from Omaha, Nebraska, she called us when she lost $100,000 on a fake lottery scam. Mm. She would have called me in 2 seconds. I would have told her it was fake.
Yeah.
But she called after thinking to file a complaint. Maybe it's too late at that point. She lost $100,000.
That makes me crawl.
I've seen so many stories in my 31-year career. It's amazing. Again, these are everybody falls for it. These are con operators. You can't tell the difference.
Right.
They look like us. They dress like us.
Right. And that's why when people are so embarrassed by something that happened, alert everyone to what happened, because they're good at it. There's a reason why they're still in business.
Right, and report it. Report it to the Better Business when you've been victimized as well, because now these websites, years ago we were the only one out there handling complaints.
Right.
Now there's hundreds of them, so that means it's diluted.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know what's happening, because there's 100 different websites people are complaining to.
Yeah, hey, I got one. I asked you this during the break. The Better Business Bureau is a name that, you know, we've all said 1,000 times. We know the thing. We've all heard it. But the story of how it started is actually pretty incredible. Talk us through that.
Sure, it's pretty incredible. We started 4 years after the federal FBI started. There was at a time and era where government wasn't set up yet to protect businesses and consumers. So business people got together and started as a vigilance committee and turned into the Better Business Bureau movement. So we started 2 years before the Federal Trade Commission started when government got involved. So we're a nonprofit organization that actually helps consumers, and really we advance marketplace trust by leveling the playing field.
Steve Burness, President and CEO of the Chicago and Northern Illinois Better Business Bureau. All right, what's your prediction for the score on Sunday?
41-0.
What are you talking about?